Well, it's a blessing to be with you again this morning. If you want to go ahead and be turning your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 12, I think that's about where we left off. If you're visiting with us, we've been doing a study of Proverbs this quarter. Been using this book by Mr. Harkrider, Proverbs, Wisdom for the Modern Man. The good thing about God's wisdom is, though, it worked for man of every age, not just in the modern times. But we'll be picking up in Proverbs chapter 12 here in just a second, but just by way of outlining today, I'd like to try to finish up Proverbs chapter 12. I feel like that's probably not overly ambitious to get that us half. But then we'll get into Proverbs 13, 14, and maybe 15 if we get really ambitious. But certainly no pressure here as we move through the book of Proverbs. We want to spend all the time that we can to absorb the wisdom that God has preserved for us in His Word. So in Proverbs, if you've been in this class before, you've heard me say this before, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. That theme verse back in all the way back now in Proverbs chapter 1. We've talked about how wisdom helps direct our walk in this life. In chapters 2 through 4, talked about framing that life in wisdom and how that walk will look. And then the alternative paths that we talked about in chapter 5 through 7. A lot of things we need to avoid in those chapters. But then ultimately it comes down to, in our lives here on this earth, we choose this wisdom, let me hold up the right book here, this wisdom, we either practice it or we don't. Wisdom has given a universal call. Wisdom is calling out to us. There's evidence of God's creation this morning. What a beautiful day we've been blessed with. But ultimately it's up to us what we do with the knowledge of God's Word. Will we let it change our lives, or will we choose foolishness? And that's kind of personified there in chapters 8 and 9. But we get into this larger section. We started this two classes ago, this idea of how do we live wisdom in our day-to-day lives. We get into these kind of 14 chapters here. This Proverbs now is not organized by speeches, but these Proverbs are organized in how life hits us, okay? There are some things that come up in life that aren't in a particular order, and that's exactly how this part of Proverbs is written. We may be dealing with one thing one moment, and something else may come up the next moment, and that's exactly how Solomon wrote it through the Spirit. We'll have several different things that come in. Mr. Harkrider's got some general themes for these chapters. I'm going to have these up here, and I'm going to try to compile at least what we've titled these sections. But as I alluded to, there's not going to be sometimes an overall theme for each individual chapter, but more of a collection of wisdom for our life as we go on. So this idea of just living in wisdom is where we're picking up in chapter 12. We finished off, and I kind of broke this chapter up the way Mr. Harkrider does. So we've already covered the last part of Proverbs chapter 12. I want to read verse 28, though, because it frames exactly all the summary I just talked about. In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway, there is no death. That's what we're talking about. How do we walk in wisdom? How can we practice wisdom? So the righteous are planted firm in this chapter. And then in this part, we're going to see how the control of the tongue, as we've seen before, but it's revisited here, how a controlled tongue will shape our lives. Let's read verses 13 through 23, and then we'll kind of take two perspectives on this part of Proverbs. So picking up there in verse 13, the wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. The truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. No grave trouble will overtake the righteous, but the wicked shall be filled with evil. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. So thinking about, and again, Mr. Harkrider outlines this the way, I think it's a good way to think about it, is there's kind of two paths to how we're going to communicate, to how we're going to use our speech to either promote wisdom, to promote foolishness, and then deal with the fruit of whichever decision we make. Verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. It makes me think back to those verses we revisited in Proverbs chapter 3. Let's turn over there briefly, because we're going to talk about that a good bit in today's lesson. Of course, verse 5 is familiar to us. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. But particularly verse 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. We got to be careful in whose esteem and whose wisdom we're relying on. And that's been a big theme, is we have to be humble enough to accept the instruction of the Lord. And if we're not humble enough, we'll fall into some of what we talked about all the way back in chapter 1. We'll be scornful of God's wisdom. We'll say, we have it all figured out already. Or we'll be completely foolish and don't even see the need for wisdom at all. So certainly we got to be careful on whose eyes we're right in. And we want to be right in the eyes of the Lord and practicing His ways. Verse 16 and 17, a fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness deceit. This is a little bit more practical on how we use our tongue and how quickly we militarize or use our tongue against others. Let's turn over to Romans chapter 12. You know, thinking about how we deal with, you know, when we get frustrated, when something bad happens to us, when someone does something to us that we're having trouble to deal with, it arouses emotion in us. What does our mouth do, right? What does our speech immediately head toward? Romans chapter 12 is talking generally at this part, but picking up in verse 9, we've got lots of lists of what Christians do, what the behavior of a Christian should be like. But there in verse 14, it says, what we're supposed to do to those who persecute us. It's going to sound really familiar to, you know, what we've talked about in the Sermon on the Mount thus far, back in Matthew 5. But bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. So contrast this idea with what the fool does in verse 16 of Proverbs chapter 12. A fool's wrath is known at once. Not a lot of leeway there, right? It's kind of, well, I got mad, it gets out of my mouth. Can't go back and catch it now. But what's our response supposed to be if we're looking at Romans? What do we do when we're upset by others? Falls into this greater theme, right, of not returning evil for evil. That's a big theme throughout the Bible. But this idea of what do we do with evil? We return evil for good. We overcome evil with good. And that's exactly what the end of Romans chapter 12 says. Romans chapter 12, if you still got your finger there, and I didn't tell you to, so if you lifted it, I would understand. Romans chapter 12 and verse 21 says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Man, that's counterintuitive, isn't it? It's really counterintuitive in our social media age. It's really counterintuitive in our political age. It's probably been counterintuitive in the world's wisdom for a long time, but it's made more obvious to us, I think, with the exposure we have to the environment we're in now. We got to be looking, one, to control our tongue, but then looking to have this attitude of not to be wrathful, but instead to leave place for God's judgment and to do our part, which is to be examples of what His Son would have us to be. Any comments so far? We'll move on to verse 18.
Why am I
I've often thought of it, and I don't know exactly what that means there, but I thought, like, yeah, man, that really set my hair on fire. You know, I was being mean to John, and then he gave me a drink of water. Like, what is it about him? What's different? Right? And that's ultimately what we'll be promoting. Our opportunities for evangelism may be stuff like that, where a lot of times people who are hurt are those who hurt others. And that, you know, we may have that message for that kind of person, even though we wouldn't really think that's the person we're, you know, if we're just picking somebody, it's hard to pick the person who's mean to us to go talk to, but maybe that's the answer. Any other comments there? I appreciate that, Noah.
Jacob, I don't really feel the need that I need to say anything, but verse 17, he that speaketh truth showeth righteousness, and a false witness deceit. Well, the first thing that came to my head when you read through that is, I hate to use the word white lies, but there are times when we're dealing with people where the truth would hurt their feelings, hurt somebody else, and sometimes you just say, maybe, you know, you would find your way around speaking them the blunt truth, because it would be painful, dangerous, dealing with your kids sometimes or your spouse. Sometimes we just kind of, you know, find a way to say what we mean without, you know, being truthful, quote unquote.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah. And that temptation's there, especially when there are consequences to us or people we love, you know, is to say, well, you know, let me fudge around this a little bit, or try to, like you said, that kind of attitude of white lies are okay, right? As long as they're not hurting, I'm using air quotes here, hurting anybody. But the reality is we're beginning to do that same thing. We're trusting our own judgment over God's judgment at that point. And there is, you know, of course you're not saying this either, but there is a way to present things, certainly, that's the best way, right? Our speech should be seasoned with salt, but the salt isn't dishonesty. It's still the truth.
You know, your example, if your kid was playing baseball and he said, how did I do? And, you know, he struck out and missed all the balls. You would be very careful how you answered that.
Right.
You wouldn't want to,
yeah.
And he needs to know the truth, but you wouldn't just say, you are awful. That's
right.
That's the truth that we wouldn't speak.
Sure, yeah, you'd say.
One truth is, I guess, is what I'm saying. Sometimes you can sugarcoat it a little bit.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And there are times that silence is gold.
Yes, sir.
And that it takes experience and wisdom to know when to apply.
Absolutely. And that is... It's so hard to do, but just exercising restraint and not saying anything. I mean, we're about to talk about it here. Let's go ahead and flip over there to James chapter 1. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Slow down, right? Don't rush into saying anything. And then we have time to consider, you know, even if we want to say something, one, but then two, what discernment do we use in picking out the words to say? How can we consider this person we're talking to? But if we don't give ourselves time to do it, we're going to be like the fool in verse 16, whose wrath is known at once. Or, and then our speech, consequently, will become like in verse 18. There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, right? Those words that we don't thoughtfully consider often are the words that hurt people. Verse 23 reminded me of something we talked about a little bit last week, kind of gotten toward the end of class. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 9, just by way of reminder. Better is one who is slighted but has a servant than one who honors himself but lacks bread. And we talked about there's this temptation for us to present an image, even if it's hurting ourselves, to present an image to others that some people can pick pretense over substance. How we'd rather people think we look great than for us actually to be okay. In verse 23, it's kind of like that. So we've talked about the honest demonstrating righteousness a little bit in this. We were mostly talking about the negative side of things. But verses 13 and 14, the wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, something we've seen in these verses. But the righteous will come through trouble. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth. So we see there is a way to speak in such a way that it's profitable to us. Ultimately, we want to speak in a way that's profitable to us in the life to come. We want to do things consistent with God's will. But certainly there are some benefits here to speaking the truth. We'll be able to navigate trouble, verse 13 says, and we'll be satisfied with good if we're able to do that. And there certainly are temporal benefits to being somebody in the office, in the workplace, in school, who people know is going to be honest. If they want to come to you for a right, you know, they'll get your honest opinion. Or if they need you to calculate something, they need to look at some books and know that it's going to be honest, you're not skimming some off the top, you may be entrusted with some things because of that. It's not always going to work out that way, but it certainly may. Let's skip down to verse 18 one more time. We talked about how words that we speak, especially in haste, can be hurtful, but the tongue of the wise promotes health there at the end of verse 18. We can have these words that promote healing. Let's turn over to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6 and verses 1 and 2. These kind of two different situations in which our words can be helpful. Brethren, if any man is overtaken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Certainly in both of these situations, we can promote a lot of spiritual health to someone else if we're using the wisdom of the Lord the way we should. We got this first situation here. Someone's overcome in sin. This is a brother or sister who we need to talk about because they've wandered on some of those paths and perhaps we talked about in chapters 5 through 7. Or maybe they've engaged in some dishonest measurement with scales, right? They're involved in some kind of dishonest practice. But we got to be willing, one, like Mark said, to actually tell them the truth. But two, we've got to monitor our attitude. We got to let our speech be seasoned with salt. But we've got to, as verse 6 and verse 1 here says, we got to approach them in a spirit of gentleness. We got to understand this may be hard for them to hear, but we got to say it anyway because we care about them, we love them. James chapter 5, we talked about last time how that kind of love, that a love that restores someone to the truth, is what covers a multitude of sins. Kind of dovetailing back with what we talked about earlier in Proverbs.
Okay. And we read the Proverbs and we try to appreciate that point that he's trying to make. But when you can relate it back to your life and say, yep, I remember right there reacted to a client that was blasting me over something over here, and I tried to defend myself or whatever, and it just blew up even worse, you know, in there. And then I thought, okay, I learned a lesson from that, and instead, be very, very gentle and stay calm and everything, and it just kind of diffuses the whole thing, and it can turn things totally around. And it's, yeah, as we're going through this, I'm thinking about situations all through my life. Thankful I'm getting a little better at it, but I mean, this has been a big challenge for me, you know, in words all through my life, in how I react. And, you know, it's, I find myself, I can be really appreciative and show things, but then I can also be really critical. And I start thinking, yeah, the way you're criticizing them, it's coming back to you, as Jesus said, right?
You said something there, I'm going to start to borrow. I think it's good, it's probably helpful, like to do what you're doing, to try to relate some of these experiences to memories we have. Because that can be one way we can really try to internalize this as we approach it more. The tongue is just so hard because we speak so much and we want to be consistent with what God has us to do, but man, it's easy for it to get ahead of us. It is for me especially.
Everything that's been said, you open your mouth and remove all doubt, right? I try not to show it as much on my face as well, because I do have a tendency when I disagree with something to go ahead and let you know without saying anything that I disagree.
Yeah.
So I've tried to work on that as well.
Yeah. Maybe, was it our countenance? Yeah, we got to keep a calm countenance even before we speak.
Your face automatically goes to nature, like, you've got to be kidding me.
What? Yeah, so sometimes almost like you need to turn around, right? And then turn around for a second, then come back to it. I think that's a great point. Because in my own life, a lot of times I'll excuse my facial expressions, but we got to be conscious. We got to be in control of our whole body, right? Not just our mouth.
Well, just using my mother as an example, when I was a child, she would look at me and say, why does your face look like that?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. It can get us in trouble too, right, if we're not careful. So finally then in verse 19, the truthful lip shall be established forever, but the lying tongue is but for a moment. You think about a tongue being established, or the lip being established forever. We've got these kind of hints, these allusions to the preservation of the righteous. You know, we know in the New Testament, we know that there is a resurrection of the just to eternal life. Those who have accepted the grace of God through following His direction and committed their lives to Him, there will be life for them. But we got a lot of these overtures in Proverbs. I'm starting to notice these more and more, where we talk about the eternal nature of life, the potential eternal nature. We're going to talk about this again in chapter 14. But this idea of the enduring of the righteous even past death. But I thought it's interesting to think about these time scales, one, from an eternal perspective, but two, about where our mind is. If we're lying, we're thinking about, man, I'm in this spot right now. If I could just get out of it, then that would be better. When in reality, almost all of our good decisions are going to spring through not thinking about this moment as the ultimate moment, but to think about this moment in the context of eternity, right? Thinking about the long-term view, beginning with the end in mind, if you like that Seven Habits book. Any comments on chapter 12 before we move on to chapter 13? I appreciate them so far. So picking up here, let's read verse 1. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Every couple of three chapters, we keep getting these instructions about children's relationship to parents. And I think that's important, one, because of the instruction, but two, it's a reminder for us to continue to be humble, to continue to look for instruction, especially if we think about how the other side is, right? A scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Think about back our verse we talked about at the beginning of class, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but what do fools do? Despise wisdom and instruction. So it's useful to us to think about this again. Again, in the context, certainly we need to listen to those who have more life experience than we do. But two, we need to, you know, be aware that that's a continuing battle. It's not something we do just once. I don't just listen to someone who knows something once. I don't listen to God's instruction once. That's a continual practice. I think it's useful to us to see that throughout the book. But then picking up two, we're going back to where we just were, back to controlling our tongue, verses 2 and 3. A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. Brother Crowley was talking about, you know, restraining our mouth, and I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. You can see what's said about here in verse 3 about the one who opens wide his lips. I don't think that's just having your mouth open wide, right? That's, you're saying a whole lot of words. You're opening yourself up to destruction by opening up idle conversation. You're just saying stuff to say things. And that's a recipe for us to get into trouble. Certainly we've been alluded to it some, but James chapter 3 has a lot to say about the tongue. And I do want to read it now. James chapter 3, we'll read the first 8 verses there. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in the world, in a word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. This is certainly some serious stuff there, isn't it? Speaking about the difficulty we've talked about of how to tame the tongue. And it is true, no man on our own, there's no wisdom on earth that will allow us to tame our tongue. But the only way we can even proceed on a journey to improve, like Brother Williams is talking about, we've got to let God's wisdom into our life, and we've got to allow Him to begin that His will, that process of sanctification, making us through His word and applying it, making us into the people we should be. Because we can't control this tongue on our own. We can't control what we say on our own. We've got to give in to God's wisdom, ultimately. Picking up there in verse 4 and 5, we're going back to something we talked about back on Wednesday. And that's to be diligent. Proverbs 13:4 says, the soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. A righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and comes to shame. So certainly there is an idea of, well, of course, if you don't do anything, if you only desire something, you're not going to get anything out of it. That's laziness, right? Is not being willing to do what we have to do. And then two, we see that it relates back to what we talked about in 2 Thessalonians. Previously, we'd alluded to this verse talking about these people who had engaged in idleness and they had stopped being busy, but had started becoming busybodies, right? And that contrast in those two terms in 2 Thessalonians. Let's read that whole passage now. You're sympathetic to these people in Thessalonica because they have such a concrete belief in the return of Christ. But they allow that almost to go too far, it seems like. They say, well, it could be any point now, and then they're completely stifled and engaged in idleness. 2 Thessalonians 3:7 says, for you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you. Nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but we worked with labor and toil night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have authority. Talked about that, right? We're not supposed to muzzle the ox while they tread out the grain. They could have accepted funds from them, but picking it back in the verse, but to make ourselves an example to that you should follow us. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. We've got to be willing to accept some responsibility for our state. Now, certainly there are some people who are incapable of work, okay, who are not able to support themselves, and we need to be generous to those people, and we need to be searching out those people to help them. But for those of us who are capable, we don't need to be lazy. We need to be people who are willing to work, just as Paul was with the Thessalonians, giving that example for them to follow. And certainly he was working too. That's not what I mean to say. But even if he worked extra to not be a burden to them and to show them extra his example. You think about work has been something we've been engaged in even since the beginning. Now, maybe not work in the same sense. Man didn't work by the sweat of his brow until after the fall. But beforehand, there were things to do. There were things to do even when we're in heaven. There will be things for us to do. You certainly see back in Genesis chapter 2, Adam was put in the garden and had that work to do, to basically to tend the garden there. Any comments so far in chapter 13? And that's the idea too. You know, I'll have a lot of kids when I'm doing eye exams on them. Like, well, what'd you do today? And they answer 95% of the time, well, nothing. Well, you didn't really do nothing the whole day, right? And that's kind of how we are if we're not working towards something good. It's not that we can just remain neutral and just sit there. A lot of times if we're not doing something, we're doing something we don't need to be doing. If we're not doing something productive. Verses 5 and 6, a righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and comes to shame. Righteousness guards him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. Again, we've talked about this idea of being honest, even when it hurts, could hurt us sometimes. But ultimately, the true hurt will come to those who engage in lying. A righteous man hates lying. It makes me think about the attitude of wisdom toward evil back in Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13. The passage there says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, and pride and arrogance in the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate." We don't need to hate people who are engaged in evil. We need to love them and care about their souls. But the actual practice, the actual sin, to have the attitude of God, we've got to hate that. And the righteous man here will hate the action of lying. It's not something we're going to be engaged in. And it's that attitude that will spring forth our action. If we're neutral on lying as a behavior, we're not going to be very successful in getting lying out of our lives. And it's the same with any sin. So we come back to this idea of who do we trust? And that's something we talked a lot about last week, and exactly a week ago. But not to trust in money, but to trust in God. Verse 7 says, "There is one who makes himself rich and yet has nothing, and one who makes himself poor and yet has great riches. The ransom of a man's life is his riches, but the poor does not hear rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoices, but the lamp of the wicked will be put out. By pride comes to nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers labor will increase." So we see here this kind of idea of where our priorities are ultimately affecting our outcome. We talked about a little bit earlier in the chapter, you know, what are we concerned with? Are we concerned with appearing rich in this age, or are we truly investing our treasure in heaven? Knowing that our actions in this way, where we invest our money, where we invest our time, are ultimately going to determine where our heart is, right? Where our treasure is, our heart will be also. We got to proactively start moving that treasure to where it should be. And ultimately, that's how we get great riches, right? Not great riches necessarily in this time, but the great riches of eternity, the great riches that come with being a child of God. That's how Moses was able to forsake the treasure of Egypt, for he looked to a greater reward, right? We got to be of that same attitude. And money really is not going to be status in the kingdom. How do you get status in the kingdom according to Matthew chapter 20?
Doing the will of your Father, good works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you have to become? You got to become a servant, right? You got to become lowly. You got to do like Jesus did. You got to wash feet. Now, metaphorically. And sometimes it might be washing feet, depending on your situation. But certainly, you've got to be lowly in heart. And those who will become great among the kingdom of the Lord will be those who are service-oriented, those who care about serving others, just like Jesus did. So, verses 12 through 18 talk about following God's word, and as a consequence, we avoid the hardship of sin. Verse 12 says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when desire comes, it is a tree of life. He who despises the word will be destroyed, but he who fears the commandment will be rewarded. The law of the wise is the fountain of life, to turn away from the snares of death. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. Every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. Poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored." So ultimately, it comes down here to, what do we do with what we're taught? What are we engaged in? There's a restatement of a lot of things we've even talked about already today. But one, we've got to esteem God's wisdom highly, but then we've got to put that into practice. And as in all things in Proverbs, it's the putting it into practice where the rubber meets the road. That's where the hard part comes. Any comments on these verses here? Anything that stuck out to you guys on verses 12 through 18? Yeah, and it's helpful too. We can think about setting goals like God does for us, right? We can evaluate subjective things like, what is our heart, what is our attitude? But it's tough, man. We put that big number up and try to reach it. We're sometimes setting ourselves up for disappointment. Yeah, thank you for your attention this morning. We'll pick up there on Wednesday night, Lord willing.